Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys, you're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to The Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Thomas Roy. Morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning, Yas. I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, actually. But Tom, obviously, you know, you're not from England. A lot of the listeners from the podcast itself will be from England themselves. So maybe just a brief background insight around who you are and what you do.
Well, first of all, I try to give you an idea where I live. This is in the, let's say, almost central part of Germany. Some of you know Frankfurt, which is a former capital of Germany in early times, in the Middle Age. And of course, most of you know Munich, so one of the specific football places in Germany. And so where I live is Würzburg, which is a city with around about 300,000 inhabitants. And Würzburg is, let's say, on a line between Frankfurt and Munich, but one third closer to Frankfurt. So maybe now you can imagine where I'm sitting right now and talking to you.
Amazing. A bit of a geography lesson. I love that. So Tom, just, you know, what just tell us, you know, what do you do? Obviously, you know, we've met back in Munich earlier this year. Obviously, you've given me a bit of an insight around the fact that you work for the German Football Federation. So I think it'd be really interesting just to get a bit more understanding of your role, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, for the German Football Federation, I'm working right now. It's actually the seventh year right now. So I started in 2016 with running courses, what we call in earlier times, it was Elite Youth License, which right now is called E Plus in the UEFA mode. Then also the A License, which is an adult license right beyond the pro license. So that means it's for the coaches in Germany in the fourth and fifth division. And right now the B Plus license is for coaches. In high performance youth football, let's say under 17 to under 13. So that's my target group. And, there was actually, let me start with the big change that happened in our system. Of course, all over the world, it was a big objective that this Corona thing, and so with let's say a break of all the courses because of no possibility to get in touch directly with the people, we tried to to create some online modules for the people. And well, the idea was then with running the online modules, well, online, of course, first of all, is very strange and new, because there is only a very hard possibility to get in touch with the people in with like body language. And it's, if you are with many people, it's pretty hard. You have these little spots on your monitor, and you cannot look in all the faces. So it was for us, it was pretty hard to get in touch with the people.
Yeah.
But in the end, we saw a chance to create new modules and to support for later times when Corona has gone again, a possibility to support the courses, to extend the courses and to create presence modules and online modules. So let's say it's like hybrid coaching courses, or how you call that, these courses right now.
Yeah, so it'll be more of a blended learning approach.
Okay, you can say blended learning as well, yes. And so right now we created like around about 50 online exercises for the participants to support the presence modules. So you can imagine before you ever have run a presence module, you start with a pre-phase, and then you have your first presence, and then you have another online phase, which is also connected to do homework with your team.
Yeah.
It's not only on the pitch, but also like having talks, having chats together.
Yeah.
But also like getting information with online seminars. So like what you do when you are doing study, when you are at university and you have online seminars. So it's actually the same.
And how have you found that? Because obviously, just in my own experience, you know, when I was coming through, obviously was, you know, doing all my qualifications, and you know, there's so many questions that have come up off the back of what you said that I'm going to get to. But you know, in my journey, a lot of it was face to face. It was that presence that you talked about. You know, that opportunity to connect with the coach developers, the coach tutors, and have that hands-on kind of support. And fundamentally, we're working in a practical world, right? What we do is on the pitch, and it's in the environments with the people. So I think the challenge that obviously online learning has within that is we can have all the conversations we want, but we need to be able to, we still need to be able to work, right? So I guess for me, one of the biggest challenges comes that it'll be interesting to see how this has happened in Germany as well. Over here, we've moved to a much more blended learning approach, where it is an element of face-to-face, it is an element of, you know, it being in contact with the coach developers, but there's also a large element of that, like you said, over Zoom calls, over different platforms, where it's much more discussion-based, if you like. You know, what are your thoughts on how that has developed and some of the challenges that then gives us as coaches and coach developers?
Cool. It will be a hard answer. I think it's depending on the way you teach. You still teach the participants. In earlier times, or also right now, coach developers are different, and I think every coach developer has his specific way to teach the participants, or to, let's not say to teach, it's actually to give them help to become better coaches. Mm. That would be actually the better expression for me.
Yeah.
I think we are moving a little away from the being an instructor and telling the participants what's the correct way.
Yeah.
But more to involve their own experience and their own meanings if it was good experience, then of course it's okay. But if it were not so good experience, then okay, how can we develop the experience that was not perfect? So I think that's what changed right now in these times, and so that I think also for me as a coach developer that took a little more time to maybe to give more space to the participants to say, okay, I have my experience as well. Also, I have my experience in teaching or in developing, but I try to pick up a little more of the experience of the participants right now.
Yeah. But do you not feel that? I mean, one of the critiques that we often have over here is that in attempts to I guess rely and maybe lean on a little bit more of the experience of the coaches themselves, that sometimes maybe we're missing opportunities to instruct. I think, you know, certainly where we're going with it, you know, certainly from my experience as a coach on courses as a learner, a lot of, I guess, the foundations, if you like, of how I coach and what I coach and what's maybe best practice, if you like, was guided and steered by those that were coach developers and coach educators for me on my journey. Whereas I feel like now, and it's, you know, it's interesting to see, because obviously this is all fundamentally directed by UEFA and given back to us as a framework to kind of go through. And, you know, a big thing they're talking about now, and they have been in the last couple of years, is reality-based learning. Do you not think we're in danger of getting to a point where we move too far away from a framework, if you like?
Well, I don't know if I got the question or your sentences right now correctly, but what I understand is it could be dangerous to leave the, let's say, the weaker participants alone and tell them, okay, before we going into a discussion, start thinking about your training sessions or your way of coaching or whatever. It's okay to pick that up and to make the participants express themselves with their experience, but it should be an option to give also information from our experience, what was maybe for the last 25 years good and successful. So maybe right now there is the challenge between, and I think that was your first sentence or your question, the direction. It's right now, it's more the decision we have to make as the developers. Does the participant need help? And we want to lift him up into our experience. And after that, of course, he can make his own experience. And he also can decide whether he takes the information he gets from me or not. That's no problem for me, because it's his team and it's his development. But in, let's say, 20 years ago, I didn't ask myself, will this guy be successful with the content I gave him? It was clear for me. But we also know that it's not the content that makes the coach successful. It's how the coach takes the content and realizes and brings it to the pitch and to the players. Mm. So the question is actually more, how does he work with all the information he gets right now and all the information he got already with his experience?
Yeah. And I get it. And I completely agree with you. I think it is definitely about how they take the knowledge and the experience and the insights and apply the stuff in practical application, right? I think the challenge from my observations has certainly been that there maybe it's a difficult one, but I think maybe there's too much freedom for coaches now. Now, yeah, I mean, I agree that there is a need for it, because fundamentally we need people to understand what's right for their environment. But if I think we're in a danger now, and I think this is by the sounds of it, it seems like this is a consistent thing across Europe at least. In that we're allowing the coaches to have too much of a, and I say this loosely, but have too much of a say on what's right and what's wrong. And it's how can someone lean on experience if they're not being given the opportunity to understand certain experiences? So they're only going off their own. Like if I haven't experienced something, then how am I going to know what I don't know? Does that make sense? And at the same time, it's almost, I think one of the challenges you have in football in particular, there's no kind of universal framework, right? There's no, these are the things that we should be doing. These are the things that this is how it should look. And I think even now within this whole process where coach education has changed, one of the things that has kind of, I think, really lost its appreciation is the technical side of the game. I think it's a lot more now around developing an environment, but that's just the first stage for me, in my opinion. I think you can, yeah, develop the environment, but what happens then? When you've now got the environment and it's a good place and it's a healthy environment, you have to now start coaching the players and you have to now start developing them. And it can't always be as they're doing with the coaches, in my opinion, letting the coaches have some freedom and then letting the players have some freedom. And then I think you're in danger of having a situation where it's like the blind leading the blind.
I like this expression. There are different, different
perspectives,
circumstances. Sure. You have to know. Maybe one circumstance is, what's the entrance level of the coach? Is he already a very self-confident coach and he has made very good experience? Or is he a coach that is just starting? Mm. I mean, that's not my target group, but I know, I have experience. 25 years ago, I started with these kind of coaches. And it was like the papa coach, and then he wanted to make a license, or he started with a 2-day introducing course. So I think first we really have to know or to understand. And that's maybe also a different point. In my opinion, is it a coach that can handle the players and
circumstances?
Yeah, the circumstances of his club or of his team.
Context.
Yeah, of his context. Or is it a coach that just, what did I say? Does he know the circumstances or does he not know? He knows the circumstances, but right now he's not on the level to influence the circumstances, but only himself and his team. So just planning training sessions and after the training session, of course, you look onto the training session. How was the result? Was it effective? Was it efficient? And does it need to make it better for the next time? Or is it already a coach that is really in detail already and knows I can influence not only my team but also the club? So I think this is a challenge where we as the coach developers need to know about the person. It's a challenge, but if you are a coach, it's easy to figure that out. If you are an instructor, it's not your job.
I think that's part of the challenge, though, isn't it? Because obviously, like I said, for me, when I was going through my journey, especially the initial qualifications and then eventually getting to the B license, a lot of it was very much instructional as opposed to what people would argue as more development focused, right? It's much more here's how you do it. And I think one of the challenges that I've certainly encountered now with coach development in the last few years in particular is that there's not enough of an instructional piece at the beginning of the journey. So I get where you're coming from. I think there is going to be people that have some experiences that they can add a value straight away because maybe they've been coached by someone who's been effective for them, or they've been a player, or they've been in certain environments, or they've had enough experience with different coaches to the point where they're able to maybe take little bits from different people. I think the challenge comes if you know, right now you get loads of new coaches who have maybe not had no experience coaching or haven't really played the game in any particular way. Surely there has to be a better starting point for them where it is a bit more directed and a bit more instructional. And I think that's one of the challenges, right? Because as the years go on, you're also, some of those people who haven't had the instruction are now also going to become coach developers.
Excuse me, did you was that a question?
No, it was just a point more specifically.
No, just a point. That, okay.
Yeah, these people are going to...
Yeah, when you were talking...
Yeah.
Yeah, when you were talking, I was just thinking about the how we could construct the perfect coach world. So then I just draw some symbols here on my
notepad. Yeah.
Paper. And I think people are so different, you know. Some people, they know already so much, and the other people, they know a lot, but they don't know how to systemize their knowledge. So maybe, well, not maybe. My experience with people very often is we turn from one side to the other opposite. So it's like when you don't think the direction is correct, then you turn 180 degrees. But maybe 15 degrees would be enough to make some more experience and to believe in the first experience you made. So I don't know if it's correct to change from instruction to coaching. Maybe the perfect thing is really to set free. Okay, what do you want? Do you want to get instructed or do you want to get coached? On which level are you right now? On which level of your knowledge already? On which level of your experience? I don't know if experience always is knowledge.
No, but
reflection, I think.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So I think one of the challenges is when you're asking those types of questions is if the person you're speaking to doesn't have enough experience of actually been able to reflect effectively, you're never going to get a real answer, are you? You're only going to get an answer that they believe is correct because they have only limited experience or limited insight around their own journey. And I think for me, I think it's a great point that you make. You know, sometimes people do go from one end of the spectrum to the other and say, no, we have to move away from this completely. Well, actually, I think one of the things that I've observed, especially in the coaching world, is this idea that instruction is now seen as negative. And it's almost, well, it can't be negative because it's information, right? And I think it's just the challenge should more be, or the focus should be, not necessarily less instruction, but more reflection and more challenge to say whether, you know, if I give you an instruction now and I'm helping you understand a certain thing, you have the platform to be able to say, actually, yes, I think this is really useful, but actually this won't work in my environment right now.
Yeah.
So it's understanding not so much what's important and what's not important, but actually what's relevant right now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's also as an experienced coach developer, you should also be able to know, okay, now is the point where I'm gonna instruct you. just to make an experience. And now you don't ask me why, you just do it. Maybe that's also, maybe it's not a fine way, but it should also be a tool, yes, in your coaching toolbox.
Yeah, from as a coach and a coach developer, I think. And I mean, one of the things I've always said is I don't mind when people ask the why, because I actually think for me as a coach developer and me as a coach, when someone asks me why, that gives me more of a platform to be able to express why this is important. Not just, and I think over time, what will happen is if I've had enough success with the information you're giving me, unless I really want to try and understand it more, I'm probably going to be more likely to take your information on board because it works for me. But if I ask why, for me personally, I'm asking why because I want to understand, not necessarily. But that, obviously, I appreciate that's not for everyone. Not everyone is going to ask why. Some people do just want to be told what to do, and that's fine too. But I think the skill in the art of effective coaching and effective coach development, if you like, is whether it's me telling you or whether it's you asking me, is helping you to understand the reasons behind what we're doing. And it's not just having a reason. I think that's one of the other dangers we've got now, in that where coaches are given so much freedom, we tell them, have a rationale, have a reason why you're doing it. And sometimes that rationale is not considered enough to have a point of, here's the evidence which supports my rationale. It's just a rationale. So I could just say, Tom, I'm doing it this way. And you say to me, well, why are you doing it that way? Oh, because this is what my players want. Okay, but based on what? I think that's the piece that's sometimes missing for me in modern day coaching and coach development. It's just, there's not enough evidence to support the decision or the application, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think we are evidence means having a lot of numbers of experience, right?
And not specific evidence. So as an example, I might say, I give you an instruction and you say to me why. I say, okay, because of this is the reason. But here's an example of the reason. So it's actually proof that this is an actual fact.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking about. Well, right now, evidence. So when I say evidence, we don't have enough evidence in the effect of coaching, then I'm correct, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, when I started being a coach developer 25 years ago, it was actually my personal way to have a mix between instruction and asking. So, but how can I say, the understanding of being an instructor was, for the participant, was, okay, instructor, give me some information.
Yeah,
I want to do it like what you say. So, and then it was normal. Huh? Then I said, okay, you've got an exercise, and I give you a frame as well. In this frame, you have to do your exercise. So, for instance, 10 people or 10 players have half a pitch, and the subject is making or attacking via wings. I don't know how you say wing attacking.
Yeah. Wing. Theme attacking in wide areas. Yeah.
Yeah, wide areas. So, and then the participant, he could ask me, yeah, okay, what do you mean? Should I have like two on the wings or three on the wings? Or, and then sometimes I gave him information. Sometimes I said, no, you have to decide yourself, depending on what was my opinion about this coach.
Mm.
And well, then it was practice, and maybe the feeling of the participant was not very well, because it was I told him, no, you get no information more, you have to do it by your own. But in the end, of course, it was me to give him the space to get experience in this specific topic. And in the end, then we were talking about what happened, and we were picking out some targets for the future, which was actually my job, to find out, okay, where are the big gaps, and where's maybe a detail in maybe how he talks to the players, or what was the size of the pitch, or some rules, or maybe some coaching, which was in the session exactly the opposite. So that was actually already 25 years ago, my job. And I think right now it's a little, yeah, like what we said before already. I give the framework. And I maybe the starting point where I ask the participant is earlier. So I don't give him more information about the framework, which I know, okay, the target of the coaching session can be reached. So maybe today it's more open, so the target also can be missed.
But do you not think that's part of the problem, right? Because for me, I think the way to describe it for me would be, we've gone away from being instructors to now becoming facilitators. So we're facilitators of learning, but I think in facilitation of learning, we've lost the opportunity, or we've lost the impact of instruction, because now instruction is seen as such a negative thing, because it's almost, well, you're telling me what to do. Well, I mean, maybe it's a generational thing, right? I mean, obviously, you know, you've been doing this a lot longer than I have. I mean, you've been doing it close to 25 years. I've only been a coach developer for the last 6 or 7. But even in my own experiences as a coach, when I've been on courses, there has to be an element of instruction, right? Because it gives you the direction that you need to go in. And I think the problem is, if you have no foundational instructions to work from, then you don't really know if you're going in the right direction, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. It depends on the target group. So if you have a really beginners, in my opinion, they need more more instruction, more information they can rely on. If there's a pro professional coach, he doesn't need instruction. Then he needs a coach really to go into details, and then, okay, what's your, I don't know how to say, your to mirror somebody, and to know, okay, how is your body language, how was your speech, how did the players react? I think that's a different target group.
But if we move forward in time, let's just say in 10 years time, some of the people that are not getting instruction now at the entry level, they're going to be coach developers, right? Because people like you aren't going to be around forever.
Well, if they are able to reflect what they were doing and where they were failing, and then move on the road to becoming a successful coach or coach developer, then of course. But maybe some don't have the patience to reflect again and again and again and again, and to change the little parts. So let me say, like a picture. We were talking about to change from one side to the other 180 degrees. So if a coach or a participant doesn't get guided, and he, after he failed on one side, then he moves 180 degrees to the other side. Then he tries again. Mm. He fails again. Maybe then he doesn't move again back to 180 degrees, but only to 170.
Yeah.
And then he tries again. He fails again. What does he do? He moves again to the other side, but not 170 degrees, only 160 degrees.
Yeah.
So if this participant has the patience and the power and the endurance to do this, again and again, then he surely will find the right way. But the question is, if you are in high performance football, do you have the time? Do you have the possibility? Do you get weaker from time to time? Do the players have their meaning of you because you failed and you failed and you failed? Of course, you failed not that much anymore, but in the end, you failed. So this is, if a person has this kind of endurance and mentality to stand up again and again and again, of course, then that will be a good end. But yeah. If we want to have the role of a supporter, then of course we wouldn't like to see the person failing and failing and failing and failing and failing again. So we would, I think we would more like to support the person to maybe have only two fails and not 15. I don't know if I could.
I think you're spot on. I think obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying is that over time, we're not going to just let the person keep failing. We just, at some point, we'll have to step in and help them. I think my concern is that as we move forward, let's just say 5 years time, there is maybe such a big lack of direction, a big lack of guidance, and a big lack of instruction that we're left in a point where fundamentally the overall standard is dropping. And I think there's so many pros and there's so many cons. I think some of the biggest positive things that have happened over the last few years in particular is that coaches are being given more freedom. Coaches are being given more license to say, this is how I want to do it, or this is how I want to do it, or whichever way they want to do it. And that's fine. So we're seeing a variety of styles in coaches. We've seen a variety of people becoming experts in different areas, whether that's with young players, whether that's older players, whether it's high performance, whether it's not, whether it's working with male players, whether it's working with female players. I think it's good that we're seeing all these, specialism. I think the challenge we have, though, is, this is just my observation, my opinion, I think there's more emphasis being placed now on just having freedom than being effective.
Oh, okay. But there is always a result in the end, right?
Yes, of course. But I mean, the result is subjective, right? So, I mean, my opinion is that I think as a collective, there's less coaching taking place and less value placed on the technical aspect of the game. Mm-hmm. Or the technical aspect of coaching, and much more value now placed on maybe the psychological and the social elements, which they are important, but fundamentally we're still playing a game based on technique, based on tactical. And I think if there's not enough guidance and direction.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
I think we're in danger that, yes, the athletes might get better. They might get more resilient, potentially. I think we have to deal with the challenges that come with different generations. And, you know, some people would suggest that the generation of maybe players and coaches coming through now are maybe not as resilient and is not as mentally strong as they were maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that we have to, you know, adapt to that. And that's just the way of the world. Mm-hmm. But I think where we're putting so much focus on, you know, over here in England, we have the four corner model. We look at technical, tactical, psychological. So I think we're spending, in my opinion, too much focus on the psychological and social side that we're losing the other side of it.
Okay. Well, that's possible. So when you were talking about technical skills. I think that's a very interesting point. Is it possible to get, let's say, technically perfect without instructions?
I don't think it is. I think where I've come to in my own coaching is, so when I was coming through as a coach, they would tell us this is how to whatever. Now, as time goes on and as experience develops, you learn that, okay, there's not just one way. There's many ways. But I guess one of the two major concerns I have is when coaches are coming into their journey now, especially at entry level, there isn't enough. Here's a way to do it. There's not enough instruction to say, here's a way to do it. Here's a starting point. Now, obviously, off the back of that, you can go and develop it and explore it and see what works. So, I always think about this one example when I was working with a group of players. In my head, it had to be this way. Mm-hmm. And then and they were all doing it in their own way, but they were still getting the outcome. So I had to have a conversation with myself where I said, well, is this a problem or is this a solution? Right. So they've come up with their own solutions. It means that I've got five or six solutions that I can learn from. Right. However, I was able to have that conversation with myself in the first place because I had a way to do it in the first place. So now my kind of coaching has gone more down the route of what's universal versus that of what is individualized. So as an example, if me and you are passing a ball back and forth, well, we can't argue the fact that if I don't hit the ball from this side, it's not going to go to you. That's a fact, right? Now, whether I choose to use my toes, whether I use the side of my foot, whether I use whatever surface, but that bit is non-negotiable.
Mm. It's a principle.
It's a principle. It's a fact. It cannot happen. It's just physics, right? So I'm saying there's not even enough, in my opinion, enough guidance or even reference to the fact that there is some things that just have to happen. And it's just left too much to interpretation so that people just come up with their own ideas and to the point where actually if this bit isn't even, if I don't even teach you this, are you even going to think about it? Because I think one of the challenges that I've observed, and obviously, yes, it depends on the level of the coach and where they're at in their experience, in their journey. But I think there is a naivety sometimes where coaches think, oh, the player's 13 years old, so they should know how to pass the ball. The player's 17 years old, so they should know how to cross it in the perfect place. But actually, who's taught them? If they've never been taught, and if you haven't been taught to be able to identify these things, how do we get it better?
Yes, I think one important point is people that come to coaching courses, they have different levels, right? And you, as a coach developer, you have to know the different kinds of knowledge and experience and levels. And you, as the coach developer, you have to have the competence to handle everybody individually, but to have, of course, a common class and a common target.
Mm.
And I think that's also the development we have right now. An add-on is to have a personal coach developer, not only the, let's say, the universal coach developer who has a course, running a course, but also
like a mentor.
Yeah, also a person that has competencies to develop a person individually, but also not only not only psychologically or mentally, but also in a tactical way, in a technical way. I mean, the football technical way, tactical way, and the conditioning. So, I think that's a challenge, a big possibility as well for the elder generation of coach developers. And also to put that in relation to the life of a coach, not only to the football circumstances or surrounding, also to the personal surrounding of a person. Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think one of the things it just comes back to me again and again is that if you talk about the older generation of coach developers who've maybe got that initial experience and they have that foundation, I guess with the foundation, it's easier to understand, okay, what information am I going to give to this person? What information can I give to this person? But if as a coach coming through now, we're not going to be here forever, right? So at one point, there's going to be a new generation of coach developers. And I guess my concern is that if the new generation of coach developers now come in and they haven't had that experience, and they haven't been guided and instructed in that way, does that, you know, what does that mean for the future of coaching?
Yeah. Well, for me, sometimes when I'm running a course, I leave the coaching role and very conscious, I say, okay, now we have to do it like that, just to give them an experience. So it's a tool of a coach also to instruct. And we should decide what we do, instruction or coaching as a tool to develop the not only the people, but of course the football, the way of playing and the way of training. And in the end, the most important thing is that football can be a wonderful sport. It can be much fun. It can be fanatism.
Yeah.
So you have you can be a fan of your team, and you can party, and you can play, you can be a coach. But I think the most important thing is not only fun. It's not fun. Is there a difference between fun and joy, or passion, maybe?
Well, I think for me, yes, I think there is. I think you can enjoy something and you can have fun. But I think one thing I always say is, if I look at it from a coaching lens as an example, I'm working with players. I don't think they always have to enjoy it to have fun.
Yes, you have to. Yes, correct. I'm right. It's like when you climb up a hill. There are some paths which are pretty steep and maybe sometimes dangerous.
Mm.
But in the end, when you're on the top, and have a wonderful view.
Exactly that. Exactly. And I think that's the greatest way to put it. And I think that's where I think maybe as coach development has evolved, I think maybe the focus is too much on trying to make it fun. But actually, like you said, you know, the enjoyment comes from actually overcoming certain obstacles, overcoming the fact that actually, do you know what, I don't know it all. I have to go back to learning. I have to go back to trying this method or trying that method. And it's not always going to work. And I think that's where the enjoyment comes from, right? It's not always going to be easy. And I think the challenge that we have, and I think this applies to coaching as well. I think we make, there's so much focus on that psychological, social part that I think we're missing out opportunities for effective development. I think we are spending too much time going from, like you said, 180 degrees. We're going from one side to the other side. And I think that's probably part of the challenge. And I guess, you know, one of the things I always, and I like how you phrased it, in that instruction is also a tool. And it is a tool because it's useful.
Of course.
And it shouldn't be viewed as a negative thing. And I think that's part of the challenge, is getting people to understand, no, instruction is okay. Instruction is okay. And, it, you know, if we don't expose coaches or players to instruction as well, then when they're lost, where are they going to go to for the answers?
When you, sorry, it's just a pop-up.
Go for it.
It's when you climb up, we had the picture of climbing up a mountain or a hill. There are some paths which are really dangerous. So as a leader, you have to decide whether you leave the participants or the group walk that path, that steep, dangerous path by themselves, but to be safe with a lane, with a security lane. I don't know if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
There is a lane that keeps you when you fall.
Is it safety net?
Safety net. Yeah. So when you are five participants in a row, and you have the, excuse me. You as a coach, or coach developer, you have to decide, or you have to rate the risk for the participants. And if you say, okay, it can hurt a little bit, it's okay, so they can make the experience. If there is it's dangerous for their lives, then of course I won't leave a lot of freedom,
yeah,
in their decisions. I would instruct them.
Like, yes.
No, you don't go this way, you go that way, and you are first, and you are second, and we're going to wait until the first is on the other side. And so that, I think that's my job.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, okay, being a football coach is, of course, not that dangerous, but yeah, maybe if there is not the right decision and not the right circumstances for the players, there is a lot of forgiven chances for the players.
I agree, and I think for me, the way I would look at that is the bit that I think, in listening to what you've just said there, and I think this come up in my head, is that I don't think there's enough recognition of consequence.
Yeah, right.
I think there needs to be more recognition of consequence in that. You know, you can coach how you want to coach, but you need to understand some of the things that you're going to get and some of the things that you're going to miss out on. And I think that's what needs to be, in my opinion, challenged more across the board, even with players. And I always think about it from this example. You know, some people need to learn through doing. Some people learn through watching. So, you know, the best example I can think of is, you know, you go in the kitchen and you turn on the cooker and it's got the fire.
Yeah.
I learned when I was younger, I watched my brothers, if they touch it and they got hurt, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But in some moments, you know, in another situation, I wanted to touch the fire because I needed to experience it for myself, because some of it is also understanding that what might be negative for one person might not be negative for me. And it's you have to go through the experience where you can fail, you can get it wrong, but then there's that element. And like I said, it's only through being able to ask yourself those questions and self-reflect and saying, okay, well, why did that not work for me? Why did that work for me? What made that work? And I think the one of the best things that, you know, I remember having a conversation with someone a few years ago, and one of the things that stuck with me through that conversation is, no matter what you do, just try something new every time. Change something slightly. So coming back to your example, don't go 180 degrees.
Just move
1 degree.
Yeah.
1 degree at a time.
Yeah.
And then you'll realize, okay, well, am I moving closer to left or am I moving closer to right? And then eventually you'll find where you feel more comfortable and where you feel like you can maybe add most value or what you can gain from more. Is it on the right or is it on the left? And I think that's something that's always stuck with me. So every session I deliver, or every time I deliver, you know, go into coach development and I'm delivering a course or a workshop, I'm always going to try something slightly differently, because if I don't try it, I'm never going to know whether it's going to work or if it doesn't work. And, you know, I think that's one of the things I would say. I think is there has to be an appreciation for change, but a recognition for consequence. So if we do move too far to the left and we do go 180 degrees, actually, what are we missing out on? But if we only move 1 degree, what are we missing out on over here? And I think it's finding the right balance and eventually being able to ask yourself the question to the point where, okay, when I'm working with someone like Tom, I'm going to do it this way. When I'm working with someone like James, I'm going to do it this way. When I'm working with someone like Michael, I'm going to do it this way, because my experience tells me that Tom is coming into this at the beginning of his journey. He has no experience, so I have to give him a bit more support with instruction. With Harry, he's been coaching for 5 years and he's worked in different age groups, so I might have to now use more questions to say, okay, well, Harry, what happened here and how did that compare to this experience and how did that compare to that experience? I think you have to constantly be trying different approaches so you can understand what experience and what information might be useful for which individual you're working with. And I think that's coach development and coaching.
Yeah. And it's also naturally when you come to different classes. We were running one course last year, but from January on, there's the next course, but it's different participants. So it's different circumstances again.
But there should still be a content, right? There should still be a core.
Of course.
And I think that's the piece.
There's one concept, but how I transfer the concept is different, or can be different. And also what you said when you were talking about Thomas and James, you can also face Thomas with James experience and concept. It's no problem, as long as you know there is a frame. And we are handling the stuff in this frame, and we don't go out, because then it will be too much experimental and
that comes back to what I was saying earlier about the evidence. Like, I'm gonna do it this way because I know because I'm with this way, I'm gonna get this.
Yeah, right. You get to the target there.
Exactly, but it's not just me just saying, oh, I'm just gonna do it for the sake of doing it.
And it's not just it's not just doing because of doing it.
Exactly.
It has consequences. That's what we were talking about.
But it's consequences earlier, which I'm aware of, that can happen. So that's my proof. That's my evidence.
Yeah, that's what we were saying with watching your brother. So I was reminded how I try to educate my kids. I try to give them space to make experience.
Yes.
So when they say they want to have eggs or soup or whatever, I tell them, okay, go ahead, make. They say, no, I cannot do it. Why? Because I've never did it before. Okay, then you just start. You can't do something wrong. It's no problem. Just take a pot, take water, take whatever you need, and then try to prepare something. That's no problem.
And I think that's the beauty of it, right? Because, you know, you can give them that opportunity. And if they get it right the first time, well done. You don't need my help. But if you need, or if I recognize that it doesn't go right, or there's a problem, or whatever, now I can help you. I can, we can look at the process, and we can say, okay, so you got the, you done part one, you done part two, you done part three. Okay, I need to help you with part four.
Well, that's not your decision. That's the decision of the person itself.
Yeah.
So when my son says, oh well, I am scared about burning my pudding or my whatever, please help me, then of course I try to give him again. Maybe I don't help him and take him away his job, but I try to give him a framework where he can do an experiment and have a good chance to be successful. That's what I'm feeling to do.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. Sometimes it's not experience, it's also just, how did you say, rational thinking?
Rational thinking, yeah.
Yeah, so, and so I was very proud of my son yesterday. You know, he prepared cookies, like Christmas cookies. I don't know if you say you have the same word, cookies, like stars and bells and so whatever, what you have on Christmas. If he was able to do this, how do you say the basic of the cookies? How do you say the
baking. Basic stuff?
The what?
Baking.
No, not the baking. The baking itself, but the
oh, the mixing the ingredients.
Yeah, the flour and
the flour, the eggs and
milk
stuff.
And whatever. Yeah. And so what comes out then into the pot is how you call it? Stove?
Dough.
Dog. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and now I remember. It was a long time ago. I was speaking so much English. Dog, yeah. And I saw him preparing this dog, and what did you do that? I couldn't do that. So when he would have asked me, okay, Papa, how do I have to do a dog? I would have said, I have no idea. Please try it yourself or ask Mama or whatever. But what I always want to know them is being aware of the consequences and to take responsibility what they are doing. Mm. So if he wants to prepare eggs sunny side up, then if it burns, then he has to know, okay, it stinks. So he has to open the windows. He has to take the pan and to clean the pan. And of course, he has to buy two more eggs. So the consequence is clear. So it's also a little challenge for him. So it's not just doing because of doing it. It's also, okay, there is a little consequence. And if I fail, the consequence, it also costs me some energy or maybe some hard words from Papa or whatever.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that just reminds me of the idea of holding people accountable.
Yeah.
Right. It's just help. You know, I sometimes get often feedback, oh, you're too harsh with players or you're too hard with the coaches. And I'm thinking, well, no, we need to hold them accountable, because if no one holds them accountable, there's no there's no fear of consequence.
Yeah, but should be.
It has to be.
Not. Right? I mean, it's like when we're climbing the mountain. The consequence to fall down and to be dead, it's actually no consequence in football.
Mm.
So I think we agree that. But the people or the participants, they should also, well, they are aware of, because they are spending some money, they're spending time, they're spending energy, they're spending leaving their families alone and whatever. So of course there are consequences. But if we transfer it to the players, do the players know their consequences if they don't train hard and don't reflect, okay, what's good for me, for my body, for my health? That's, interesting point you were coming to.
No, definitely. And I think one, and I'll finish with this. And I think one thing I always say is, for me, the coach's job is to help the players get to a level that they've never imagined. No matter how low it or high it is, if they feel like, you know, they can get to here, then the coach's job is just to take them to here. Mm-hmm. Just take them above what they think is possible. And then a coach developer's job, in my opinion, again, is take the coach from what they think is possible to slightly above. You have to, it's just about opening their minds to different possibilities, in my opinion. And I think instruction is a great way to do that. Questions are a great way to do that. Peer learning is a great way to do that, whether with coaches or players, helping them understand and learn from each other's experiences. But I think everything coming back to that rational thinking, why are you doing it that way? What's the evidence? What are you going after? You can't just be a thought. It's got to be something that's considered. It's got to be something that's not necessarily structured, but planned.
The crucial thing is reflection.
Yeah.
Self-consciousness and reflection.
100%. And I think one of the first conversations we had was, you know, what are some of the key things that we go after when we're coaching coaches? And I think for me, it's the why. Why are we doing it? Why do you want to be a coach? What type of coach do you want to be? Right.
Yeah,
we're going to get to some philosophical conversation, but I think it's a great place to start, because if you understand why you're doing it, then I think it can help you understand what you want it to look like as a coach. Because we're all going to be, you know, whether you could have A license, I could have A license, James down the road could have A license, but we're all going to be different coaches. Yes, we might have some commonality, but how we view coaching will be very different. And how we appreciate different aspects of coaching will be very different because of our own experiences. And more importantly, because of the reasons why we're doing it.
I think I was, the why, of course, is a good word, but isn't it what for? Now we're getting philosophical. Yeah.
No, but I think why is a good place to start.
It's to start, right? But the target or the step further
for a coach on the start of their journey, I think what for is probably too big a question.
Okay, too big.
I think it's too big a question, because I think what for, if they haven't had enough on, this is just my opinion, I think if they haven't had thought about it enough, what for will leave them in just a big hole. I think what for can come after you've had some experience, after you've had some positive impact, after you've had some negative experience. So for me, what for is, people ask me, well, don't you enjoy coaching? I said, no, I love coaching. But for me, I want to add value. Football is my passion. So for me, I prefer to do coach development because I feel like I can have a bigger impact. I can work with maybe one group of players and I have 15 or 16 players. Or if I deliver a workshop or I deliver a course, I'm working with 15 or 16 coaches and they've all got 15 or 16 players. So if one of my messages land with those coaches, then that's potentially, you know, I don't know, 300 players, 400 players that maybe have got my message now. That's the way that I look at it. So it's about me adding value and having as much impact as possible. And again, helping me, I'm a curious person. I like thinking, I like asking questions. And I think something that's important, like what you said, it's not for me to decide what your journey looks like, but it's for me to help you understand what's accessible for you based on my own experience and my knowledge, so then give you the opportunity and the option to say, actually, yeah, I want a bit of that. I want a bit of that.
When you were saying to be a coach means to lift a player to a higher level, then
I think not necessarily lift the player, but open their mind to bigger expectations. Because I don't think we can control whether that player, or even if I'm working with a coach, whether that coach does it. But what we can do is I do believe we all have the capacity to do it, is to expand their thinking.
Mm. And you were saying, to lift up the player. Then I thought by myself, sometimes players have a higher target than I would rate what they get.
Yeah.
So I
think there's only challenge with that, but that's where accountability comes into it, right? Because if you've got that expectation or you think you're here, well, I need you to understand that if you think you're here and I think you're here, this is where my evidence comes back in. I don't think you're here. I think you're here because of this. So as an example, you have basic example. You have a player who's been in top goal scorer in one team. They score 3 goals every game. So everyone gives them a round of applause. But actually, when you look at it, you say, okay, you scored 3 goals, but you missed 15 shots.
Yeah, or you play against players which are one head.
Exactly. So you have to give them context, help them understand, okay, yeah, there's been some positives. But if we look at the big picture, those positives, for you, they look like a 9 out of 10. But actually, they're probably closer to 6. And it's not for me to put you down, but if I don't help you understand the reasons why you're getting that success or reasons why it looks that way, then I think I'm not doing my job. So I have to be the bad guy sometimes.
Yes.
Because it's what's going to help you.
Yeah. Correct. That's also a tool.
Exactly, yeah. I think that's probably one of the biggest fears for me. I don't think enough coaches are willing to be the bad guy.
I agree. No, it's easier to be a good guy and to say, well, everything is fine and smooth and
I mean, the one thing that always comes back to me is that, I mean, in martial arts, as an example, they say that if we're sparring in martial arts, if I go easy on you, I'm causing you more harm than good. Right? Because if I don't actually train with you properly, you're not going to get better. So I have to be honest with you. I have to, you know, where you have a weakness, I have to expose it. Where you have a strength, I have to recognize it. And I have to be willing to be, you know, the bad guy and put you in situations that are going to be difficult for you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to get better. And I think the easiest way to explain it is maybe you have to be harsh to be nice.
Sometimes. Yes.
Yeah.
We can also again go back to the picture of the mountain.
Mm.
If it's not that dangerous that you would lose your life, but maybe you can slip and you hurt your knee or whatever, it's still okay.
Yes.
So in martial arts, like it's well, I can hit you, but maybe not with full strength. But I show you, oh, I hit you.
Exactly.
You feel it and it hurts as well, exactly. But not that it's not deathly or doesn't break your bones, but you have a hematome, how do you say? Not in the English, but like a blue spot. When they punch you on your shoulder, you get a blue spot there. Of course, that's good. How do you say it? It's hard.
A bruise. Okay. Yeah, you can get you get bruised, but it's always gonna help. It's always gonna heal eventually.
Yeah, we can transfer that picture also to football training. When you defend and you don't defend hard, and also hit sometimes your opponent, then it's just gambling. Huh? It's not training. That's why in Germany, the youth teams, they all have to wear shin guards.
Mm.
But in the end, if my player comes to me and says, hey, coach, I don't want to wear shin guards, I say, yeah, it's okay. No problem.
It's your choice.
It's your choice. But I tell the other guys, you don't need to
Don't need to go easy.
Yeah, you don't need to protect this guy. You do your job as a defender.
Yeah.
And
learn the hard way. That's right. That's right. Tom, it's been
a responsibility as well, huh?
I think it's just getting them to understand what's important, what's not important, and how these things will impact your ability to perform.
And in the other side, you know, if I tell them, no, you have to wear shin guards, it could be also a way, but it's not deathly. So for me, it's your free choice.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Make your experience. Yeah, of course.
100%.
So actually, when you see the players in the Bundesliga, some of them, they really have shin guards like...
Oh, it's like this small, right? It's crazy. What's the point?
Just to follow the rule.
Yeah.
But also, when you see the statistics of injuries, broken bones, I actually don't know if we have some.
It's an interesting point. I've never actually thought about that. I think it's more just precautionary, right? Yeah. But even hurts. To be honest with you, even when you've got them, it still hurts.
Yes, it hurts. Okay.
No, it's good. Tom, it's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Hope you have too. What's next for Tom? What have you got coming up?
Well, I have to correct some, or not to correct, but I have to, this Monday, Tuesday, I had some examinations, so I still have to do the protocol.
Yeah.
And upload it to our database. And when I finish this, then it's Christmas mode. Tomorrow we're gonna go to a circus, to a Christmas circus. Then Sunday, of course, in Germany, it's traditionally Christmas and family. And then, yeah, doing some sports, try to keep my shape or make it better. And then in second week of January, start again.
Amazing.
Being a coach developer and preparing some things for January when we start with the courses again.
Awesome. Tom, I wish you all the best. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year going into the new year. I'm sure we'll be in touch anyway, but I really appreciate your time again today. It's been really enjoyable.
Yes, thank you very much. Also for you, have a nice time. Have a nice Christmas, even if it's not your favorite celebration, but at least you will have some time with your family. And in Germany we say slip to the other side of or to the next year. How do you say well? Slip well, not sleep well, but slip well to the next year, and then we're gonna meet next year.
Most definitely.
Video or maybe in person.
Definitely. I'm looking to come out again, so I'll definitely try and make that happen. Tom, thank you again for your time.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up.
CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.